Gentlemen, welcome. I think we give a few more minutes to get a few more stragglers in here. Stevie, how's the family, man? Everybody still sick? Or are you guys on the mend?
I don't know. It seems like this thing is like whatever Beata had, thankfully it's kicking, it's gone. But at the same time though, it seems like whatever was maybe the underlying thing is still kicking through the house because like Miles today vomited for no reason. And then he gets on this little Hugh Hefner robe and he'll walk around the house in this robe. And it's like you can tell he likes being coddled, like he likes being sick almost because he gets to wear his robe, he
Right.
gets Stanford. So it's all part of it. But I don't know what's going on. It's like it just seems keeps on like doing this around the house.
It was funny. My kids were the same, and I noticed when they were young that they got so much extra attention when they were sick that they sometimes just wanted to be sick. Like, oh, do you know, I know daddy's gonna stay home with me and he's gonna rub my back. And I'm just like, hold on a minute here. Are you actually sick? Yeah, man, it happened a lot.
Oh, he's the worst for it too, man. Like if you take him to bed, he'll roll on his side and he's like, "Daddy, scratch my back." So he just scratches back and then he goes, and then that's your cue to start humming to him. And he won't let you not do it. And you just have to do it. It's like, all right, this is an embarrassing experience of me scratching his back, humming some kind of song I'm making up on the spot.
Dude, I don't think it's embarrassing at all. Like, man, whatever I can do to show love to my kids, I'm in, man. Like, you guys don't know me as a dad or the coach. You guys don't know me as a dad, but I put on this like hard persona in my life, but I'm such a fucking softy with my kids. It's kind of funny. Like anyone who comes, yeah, Andrew's saying, yeah, Andrew knows me. I'm a very, very soft, loving dad in many ways. So, gents, thanks for coming. Point of today's meeting, one of the big things that I want to kind of drill home with everybody is the one of the primary mental framings you should be taking on is I need to move really, really well. And I need to be really effective in the way that I move. And that sounds a little bit vague and convoluted, but it's really not.
Clearly not
And
for a second man, Chase.
so it moving really well can be, let's say, subjectively and objectively quantified. And what I want you guys to think about, and Steve's going to take over from this for me in a minute because he's better than me at this stuff, but the one thing that I like to do as far as an acid test for like, hey, is this movement really effective? I like to call it the one rep test. And so if I said to you guys, you only get one rep, right? So let's pick any exercise you choose. You get one rep. And in that one rep, you have to do everything in your power to fatigue this muscle. How would you do it? So let's say, for example, you get a bicep curl. And so you're like, I'm gonna stick my bicep out, I'm gonna do a bicep curl. So I only get one rep, both directions, in, out, concentric, eccentric, get one rep. If I give you that test for every body part and every exercise, you'll get one rep. How would you do that rep? What would that rep look and feel like? I want you to take on that mental exercise right now. So what would it, if I got one rep with my bicep and I had to fatigue it, my goal is like I got to fatigue the heck out of this. Or I got one rep on a squat, or I got one rep in a lunge, and I only get that one rep. Somebody tell me what that's going to look and feel like. What are you going to be doing? Where's your attention going to be? Guys, if you have the ability to put your video on right now, please do so. If you're going to be here, guys, I want you guys to have your videos on. I don't care if you're walking, put your video on. All right, so think about this. If you're driving, that's cool. Everybody, if you can, put your arm out. However you want to put it out, somewhere to the side, any arm. Okay. I need you to squeeze your bicep as hard as you can, but don't bend your arm. You can bend it a little bit. You see, mine's kind of bent. So squeeze your bicep as hard as you can, but don't bend it. Now, what you'll notice in that position, you're going to keep it there for a minute. You notice your bicep is contracted, and you notice your tricep is also going to be contracted. It's called co-contraction. So as I start to contract my bicep harder, the only way I can move my forearm closer to my elbow is my tricep actually relaxes a little bit. So this is a skill. The contraction of the bicep requires the relaxation of the tricep. As I continue to contract the bicep harder, the forearm starts to bend a little bit. Continue to contract as hard as you can, or just, yeah, the motion is so minimal. I'm just trying to create as much tension in this muscle as I can. Keep contracting so hard that you start to create some motion, but it's only because the bicep is contracting. It's almost like the bicep and the tricep are creating a tug of war. Don't let that relax. If I was to come and jam my thumb into your bicep, take the other hand, put your thumb into your bicep. I want you to feel it. I really squeeze it like you're going to jam your thumb into your bicep. Squeeze as hard as you can. Now come all the way in. Keep squeezing as hard as you can. Now keep that amount of tension. Keep that amount of contraction. Go the opposite direction. Go the opposite direction. Keep the tension. Squeeze as hard as you can. Squeeze as hard as you can. Squeeze as hard as you can. All the way out now. All the way out now. Right. So we just did one rep. And if you did it with any sort of effort, you're going to be like, one, that was really hard. Two, I have a pump. And three, I don't want to do it again. Anybody feel that way? Yeah. Now imagine if you took every rep in the gym that seriously with that much focus and that much effort and presence, right? That's quality of rep. So I just want to start with that. I'm going to pass it off to Coach Steve, so I don't have to talk too much. But I'll stay here for your support. Steve, you're up, buddy.
Thank you. Is Andrew in the call today? Before I was going to start, I was going to ask if anybody had any wins. I thought I saw Andrew there.
No, Andrew's picking up his daughter from school. He said he'll be
Oh.
on. He has picked her up at 3:11, so he'll be on just after that.
Cool. Well, I'm going to definitely call a couple of mine. I'm going to call out Jimmy, Nate, and Vamshi. Jimmy, let's start with you. Jimmy is going through his cut. And I just wanted to say, Jimmy, just dude, you're doing great. I know it's the first like what seven or 9 days, but you're kicking butt and you're hanging in there. And it was really funny because we were talking about like glycogen depletion, and I was like, hey, you're gonna feel this come at this day. And then it happened, and then he dropped me a text, and we had a good laugh. But dude, just hang in there. You're doing great. I just wanted to kind of call you out here because you're gonna see some awesome changes. It's really cool seeing just the amount of sheer mass you've put on. Did you have anything you wanted to pop in and just suggest for the guys who are about to go through similar experiences? I find dieting is always so personal, and sometimes people shy away from the discomfort of like, what it feels like to wake up looking flat.
Just trust the process. Definitely measure your food, log it all. If you're going through the cut, Steve, your suggestion to add salt to pretty much everything has helped with the energy. So salt will be your friend, guys. Lots of sleep. And just keep pushing hard. It's interesting when the energy just drops when you're not used to it. We've been doing, what do we do, 5 months of bulking.
Yeah.
So you kind of get used to all that food, and then it's just a change, but it's interesting. It's fun to watch. Mostly
So
fun.
can I throw something in there on top of you, Jimmy? So anyone who thinks they lose muscle when they're dieting, actually it's been proven that you're not. So you can be in a pretty significant caloric deficit and not lose any muscle, which is huge, right? Provided you're training, obviously. If you're sitting on your butt, you could lose muscle, but you could be at a pretty significant deficit and not lose any muscle, which is awesome. And the absence of energy that you feel is actually just the rate of energy production. So you're still producing energy, you're just not producing it as fast as your body needs it. So that's a good thing. As your body is actually producing energy slower than you need, it's actually trying to like ramp up and work faster. So when you feel those lulls in energy, I always associate that with like, good. It means my body's is it knows it's tired and it's trying to do things as fast as it can. It's like pushing the rate limit up. So that's a good way to think about it. It's like, hey, when I'm tired, keep pushing hard, because the body is forced to work harder and produce more energy.
And Nate, the cool thing with Nate is that if you've ever seen Nate, first of all, he's a specimen. Secondly, we'd already get just as much mass on as possible. And you'll see this, Ben. I'll send you this. We were experimenting with posing just so that he could learn like these end ranges, right? And get into certain positions that his body was unfamiliar with. And once he started, like certain poses, just the guy looked like just up there like a statue, looked awesome, and you could see his body shine. Other poses, it's like, oh, what's happening? And it wasn't that it was bad; it's that he couldn't get in positions. And you could definitely tell him particular things like lats and stuff like that. Then once he unlocked that position, like not like literally, what was the picture? It was like a 45 days, Nate, that I showed you, like the comparison. And his lats took off. And just because he started learning how to get into that position. So I wanted to kind of call you out there, bud, and see if you had any suggestions for guys. Cause this is actually almost a segue to what I was going to talk about too.
I listened to your coach. Basically, I know that wasn't meant to be a plug, but getting into the ends of the ranges of movements. It's something that muscle intelligence, they talk about all the time. And over the last 3 months, and actually like hanging out in the ends of the ranges, like in areas where I just felt like cement, just couldn't get into those ranges. Just like all of a sudden, like I'm doing poses and I'm like, oh wow, I can actually get in these positions, and I'm not like forcing myself to do it. So yeah, like listen to your coach.
The lat spread's interesting though, right? Because like I sucked at that too. A lot of people have a hard time with that because there's a lot of like weird rotation stuff happening at the scap, and it shows a lot of, it could even reveal breathing mechanics or spinal mechanic issues. But yeah, dude, awesome stuff.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, man. So what I kind of want to talk about, guys, today was like, when I was thinking about doing the call, I was thinking about my clients and if I could do or offer any advice that not only my clients could benefit from, but hopefully everybody's clients that works at MI. Because if our job is to provide insight and value so that you can get expedited results, then it's like, what's the best way to deliver that? And so to go, kind of go on the topic of trying to expedite results and get your body in positions to yield more hypertrophy or whatever, it's just like, positions and exercise and everything. Like, what does that mean to you guys? Because I know that we've talked often. If you guys have been on the calls most recently, you probably have heard us talk and throw these terms, lengthen positions and shorten positions and all this kind of stuff. You've heard this a lot, right? So like, what does that mean? What's the application of that? How does it look? Because a lot of people, I find that there's a lot of thought with clients. This is what I see on the videos that I get commonly from my clients. Cause I don't even request anymore. It's pretty much like a thing that I absolutely demand because I know when I look at my clients who see amazing results, if there's commonalities and one of them, if not the most important one, is videos, because I can see in a second whether or not the person's able to do certain things like reach ranges. Because if they can, they're going to see success there. I know it. And then if they can't, they're not. And that's just the way it works, right? It's not going to be an option. Like, you guys have seen people who do squats that look like good mornings, right? That person's never growing their quads. It's just the way it works. It's not like he's going to grow his quad. It's not going to happen. So it's like, if we can eliminate these factors as quick as possible. And if I can try to talk to you guys right now about what that looks like, and sometimes the reason behind exercise selection or the reason behind going slow and what's tempo about and the questions we hear, that's kind of what I want to talk about. So if we start from the point of like videos and tempo, there's certain, again, commonalities that I see among certain people, and that would be like acceleration, deceleration, understanding what the intention of tempo is. And then obviously what it means to really get into muscles. So acceleration, deceleration, and how that works with tempo. The reason I'm going to talk about this first is because it's a quick little thing I want you to pay attention to throughout the videos I kind of show you today, because I like doing that. And I want you guys to think about how, if you have a tempo, you guys all know how to read tempo, yeah? Simple nods, yeah. You guys know how to. So I find people, you say yes, and then you see their squat, and it's like, and they just drop, right? And it's like, okay, so there's an intention to read tempo, but then what, it's almost like 1, 2, 3, 5, 1, 2, 3, and it's like just so fast. And so there's an acceleration. And an acceleration means to us like a loss of control, right? So if we're looking at movement quality and tempo, then we should see almost like an attempt to decelerate as a way to control. So one of my clients last week, his name's Gabe. As a warm-up, just to try to learn how to get in positions, I gave him a step up because I feel the step ups are a really cool opportunity to learn how to decelerate. Especially, you ever guys done like a step up at a good 45 degrees and you try to not fall, and you almost feel like the glute just gives out, or you go into spinal like flexion, and you kind of round down. So I told him, I was like, I want you to actually cue pausing, try to cue it, try to pause that motion as you go down. You won't be able to, but if you pause and you try to, then you'll slow down. Because if he didn't, he just accelerated into the hole and he just fell and he lost all muscle contraction. But because he started cueing this, he started getting better at it. And then within a week, his squat went up 20 pounds. It wasn't even like the muscle was there, right? Because he had the strength. He just learned how to actually control that range. Then he knew what it felt like. And so we see this everywhere, right? And so the second thing tempo is going to provide is an opportunity to get into certain ranges, not just paying attention to acceleration and deceleration, but can you get into the range and can you spend time there? So just for anybody, sorry, who hasn't been told this, I'm going to tell you right now, try to count your tempo in Mississippis, because if you're not, you're probably not counting your tempo, right? But let's just say that you are, because you're all great clients. if you're doing a tempo and you're going into the pocket of a squat and you count one Mississippi, there should be enough time to take away the elastic energy of the squat so you can actually feel your muscles contract, then you push back up. There should be no bouncing. There should be no, and I struggled with that too, right? And it wasn't until I kind of leaned into it and realized, like, I suck at this. I need to learn how to control these muscles here, because I was relying on like that tension to kind of get me back out. And you realize, like, okay, this tempo is doing different things for me. Because a lot of people, the feedback I get, and again, you guys can just nod along if this is what you felt when you enter the program, what you feel with tempo is, this sucks. I don't want to do it. I'm doing this because my coach says I typically do better with lower rep ranges. That's what you want to tell your coach. And then it's like you're made to do tempo, which means lightweight and longer sets. You're like, I don't like this. This doesn't make me feel comfortable. And it's usually exposing just a lot of weaknesses, which is sometimes, a little daunting. It's a little bit depressing because we want to lift heavy stuff because we're guys. But at the same time, it's like, hey, we want to lean into this. Let's get strong. Let's take advantage of this because it's going to have like such a high yield in return for you guys. So if you guys, just everybody's with me so far with these kind of things, it's making sense.
Something to add for you, Stevie. The reason people avoid hard positions is worth talking about, right? So, as an example, how many of you guys would identify as saying, I don't like cardio? Some people say I don't like cardio. Yeah. So, why most people would say they don't like cardio is it's a certain level of discomfort. And discomfort doesn't have to mean like it's pain, it's just like this doesn't feel good. And it's unfamiliar. So you don't know that if you keep going, how much more uncomfortable it's going to get. So as we become, for new, for example, we're very unaccustomed to any type of discomfort. Therefore, as we start to move into that discomfort, it's unfamiliar. It becomes, it's literally a fear response. You're like, get me the fuck out of here. Same thing on your squatting, same thing on your hack squats and your leg extensions. The unfamiliar territory is what causes people to be afraid of it, or the quote unquote not like it. So the only way through that is one of two ways. You either say, well, I don't like it and I'm going to keep going anyways, or you start training yourself to start liking it. You're saying, hey man, I like this discomfort. I want to move closer to this discomfort. This discomfort is my friend. You have to change your psychological approach, whether it be for cardio or squatting or leg extensions, it doesn't matter. The unfamiliar nature of the territory is what causes people then, quote unquote, not like it. That's it. Uncomfortable, and I'm not sure how this is going to feel if I continue to go. So think about that. Like, I was riding a bike today, and I was on a rower, I was on a bike, and it sucked. And I just was like, oh, it's just because I haven't done this in a while. It's unfamiliar. It doesn't suck. It's not that bad. It's just the total, and this is key too, the total sum of all the discomfort you feel in your body, or call it all the sensation you feel in your body, is what tells your brain to stop. So if it's like my lungs are burning, my quads are burning, my hands are burning, everyone has a total amount of like tolerable limit. Like I can't tolerate any more than this. And if it goes any higher than that, I'm going to stop. So that's important you think about. Your tolerable limit is what determines your stopping point. So you could say, well, my tolerable limit could be way up here, or it could be way down here, and you get to determine that.
I like you said that, Ben. I had a client today. She's been doing some programming. This client I've worked with for years, and she's one of the people who typically shies away from any type of discomfort. She hates it. She will like, it's like I could give her like a list of, hey, these are five top things you need to work on. She's like, okay, these are five things I will not work on, and she'll just go through her life just not doing them. And so she's done them this last month. She's done great, and in her deadlift, like pretty typical. You guys ever feel like when you're going down a deadlift, like you can control it, but then once the bar gets past the knees, you just drop. So the second you get into deep hip flexion, right? Like you can't control, and then you just fall. And so this was a big focus. I was like, you need to learn how to control that eccentric, because she wants to get her 100 max up. Like you need to learn how to control these ranges. So she broke record today. She deadlifted 385, did great. Big lift for a girl, right? And like frig, it looked awesome too. Cool thing is, it wasn't only faster and better, but it was just like more confident. There was no reservations about it. If you see my Instagram story, so you'll see her pull it. It's an easy lift. And it one of the things that you said there, Ben, about the whole recognition and being like, I'm okay with this, is right after she hit it, I was like, congratulate her, this is awesome. But I sent her a note saying, like, I want you to take this moment and actually, I just want you to quickly reflect and just get some kind of inventory on the things that you did, the actions you took. and correlate them to the fact that you took action, this got you this achievement. So it's like, it's okay to sit in the discomfort of what once was hard. It was hard for her to go into that position with an empty bar, but it's like, that got you here. The achievement got, or the work got you the achievement. Now you're proud. Now you're confident. And then what's going to happen is that's going to spiral. And then the next time somebody says, here's an ugly position, you're probably gonna be more likely to say like, oh, I should probably sit in this a little longer, rather than being like, oh, I don't like it. Because we all have those positions, right? Like sitting in deep squats or something like that. Like, if, how many people right now can sit in a deep squat and just hang out? Could you do the rest of this call in a deep squat? Right. So like, these are positions that like you can exploit and you will see returns. So yeah. So with this, what I did, guys, I just kind of picked up some videos. What I was thinking of doing is like showing you guys some videos on like certain positions that we talk about when it comes down to lengthened positions, shortened positions. Disclaimer alert, this is just bro stuff. I can't control the form of guys that are doing this, especially guys like Arnold and BPAC. But that said, though, I just wanted you guys to see this so you can understand the intention behind certain exercises, and we'll talk about that as it goes. So I'm going to share my screen. Do I, can I share my screen? Yeah. You guys seem pumping iron? Yeah. So like, lengthen chest positions. The reason why I want to talk about this is because like if you watch, you guys have seen this movie, right? Yes, please. Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to be an MI unless you've seen Pumping Iron. Way it works. So if you guys have watched Pumping Iron, or if you've just, you know, watched Arnold do flies, he always had this massive just ability to get into this huge end range for his flies. Now, whether or not he's doing it right or wrong, I don't know. I'm not going to comment on that kind of stuff. My point really isn't that. My point of kind of sharing that video and showing that was just that, like, when people are talking about experiencing ranges, you can obviously see he had no problem going in there. He wasn't accelerating and dropping into it. He wasn't losing control. He had an ability to do that. And you could probably say that the ends was justified by the means, right? Or vice versa, the means justified by the end, because he had amazing chest. It worked, right? He was able to get in there. He obviously couldn't. Like, it's not like he was like, oh, I can't get in there, my shoulder hurt, I'm just gonna like massage it a couple times and do this whole like Jimmy and then complain that I have bad genetics. Like, he got in that in position. And you'll see that across everybody who has a good muscle. I've been playing that game with myself a lot lately, where I'm looking at my own training and I'm thinking, it's like, why does this muscle grow? And because I have to turn the trainer brain or the coach brain off, right? I'm like, why is this muscle growing so well? And then I'll watch training videos myself. I'm like, I'm doing this really well. Like, I was watching myself train chest and I was like, I just chill. I'm hanging out. I just like, where is it? But then I noticed in other muscles, I tend to accelerate or decelerate, or I just kind of get out of the positions and it's more about getting things done. Like, work ethic's not an issue, right? But that would be. So when we're talking about like reaching end ranges, like that's what I wanted you guys to kind of see is like, do you see how he moved? Do you guys understand that? Did you see how he moved, how he got into positions? Because when us coaches are seeing clients attempt exercises, what we're trying to look for is like, hey, do they have the confidence and the competence in these areas? Because that can, if we get a video, that can give us an ability to, hey, he can't get there. We're going to give you this exercise as an intervention so that we can get this result. Bringing back my client, Gabe, one of the reasons I gave him the step up, or sorry, one of the reasons I was talking with him about the step up is because we had a similar issue with his Bulgarian split squat. Whenever he'd go down, he'd go back. His mass would always shift. He couldn't keep his mass forward, or just even in a sagittal plane, like he would just go boom and move. So I was like, okay, let's reverse. Let's bring this motion to a reverse lunge. I want you to try to. Ben has a really great video on reverse lunges, if you haven't seen it, where he's talking about how like your body's here, you want to break the knee and the hip at the same time, and your back leg's almost floating, and you're just using it as a kickstand. You're touching down, then come back up. Have you guys seen that one, Jimmy? Yeah, I think you have. Yeah. Guys, please also take off your mics and just talk to me too, because I don't want to just jam it the whole time. But with that video, the whole point was for Gabe to learn how to just control his center mass, because center mass is really what's going to dictate muscle contractions in terms of the positions we're using. I needed him to get his knee over his toe, because whenever he would do any squatting positions, he'd go down. The second his knee would go to a certain point, he'd just start doing a stripper fall. The stripper fall is when it turns into that good morning, right? So I'm going to share my screen again, guys. If there isn't anything else you guys want to talk about in terms of Arnold's glorious chest. So that would be a lengthened position, okay? This is a lengthened position for quads. So I couldn't find many good pendulum squat videos online for some reason. But what I want you to notice is that when it comes down to like lengthened position, short positions, One of the hardest problems in my experience trying to get people to experience them is their capacity for internal stability, right? Because usually that's the thing that's going to go before they actually are able to. So we provide implementations like hack squats or pendulum squats to be able to get you to experience that. But I want you to know something. Can you guys tell me what he's doing, like what his joints are doing that's really good in this position? Maybe not the athlete so much himself, but can you guys tell what we'd want to see in this motion? I'm not so much a fan of that right there, but in the beginning it was better.
Closing the
That's,
knee.
yeah, you got it. Closing the knee, right? Like what did Ben say in the beginning of the call? He was talking about how like you bring your bicep out here, you can contract it, right? So if we're thinking about closing that joint, open that joint, same thing works for the legs, right? So we want to close that knee joint. You ever stretch your quad, right? You want to pull your leg behind you and you try to close your knee, right? Same kind of thing. So pendulum squats, hack squats, these provide us the opportunity. How many of you guys notice that when you squat, again, your hips go back? It's not necessarily a bad thing. It could be a biomechanics thing. Like you just aren't made for that position. So you might have to manipulate certain positions. You might have used certain bars or certain other strategies to get that position. But yeah, it's just there's certain things like this that are very, very advantageous to be able to experience that position so you can get accelerated quad growth. But again, you don't want to be able to bring this into something more dynamic so that you can also develop that external stability. You guys have any questions about the pendulum squat or about closing the knee in terms of getting into a lengthened quad position? Do you guys have any personal experiences? Anybody have a hard time getting that knee over the toe, getting into a deep squat? Andrew, nice to see you join us.
I've been fighting hip issues for about 10 years, so I'm just now getting back to a spot where I can even try to squat and not have issues. Yeah, rudiments are probably going to be my best bet. Sorry, didn't. Yeah.
That's okay. Sorry, I'm trying to find you, buddy. Where are you?
Matt, right below Ben.
Oh, there you are. Sorry, I didn't see you there. For some reason, I didn't see it. Yeah, there you go. Dude, knee hurt?
Knee is currently okay right now. I finally found a physio that's got the hip behaving properly. Just slowly working my way back into it.
Was it like an old injury? What was it?
I had a Pac-Man machine pushed over on me by an ex-wife. There's a reason why she's an ex-wife.
Gotcha.
And it butterflied the leg out pretty good. And I just, there was no, it was got scar tissue and just took a long time to decompress the hip. I couldn't find somebody that could help me with it. This actually, this is not, I'm taking guys' time that they don't need to hear this stuff. Sorry.
No, it's all good, man. I just wanted to, yeah, get your opinion on stuff like that. This is always great. This stuff is also, it's like certain isolated machines can be useful for that though, because if you're training around pain, especially stuff that like there's two types of injuries, right? Stuff that's like built up over time, or like you take a hammer and you hit your hand, you're like, ow, I have to work around this. And if that's that kind of thing, find the machines that work for you, right? Because certain machines allow you to experiment with different positions. Like the squat, even if it's something that's isolated, it's still dependent on the hip, right? So you might find you better with just a leg extension or something like that if there's pain. But who's your coach?
Dan.
Dan?
Yep.
Well,
He helped me quite a bit.
Dan's
We're
awesome.
doing extensions and leg press, and I've been finally gotten back to a hex bar deadlift, which is I've been going really light, but managing to make that work. So Dan is dragging me out of that hole.
Man. Dan's the man. He's the best. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to kind of show you guys was so videos. I want to kind of stress that point again, because before I go on, I want to talk about this. So muscles need to contract. Muscles need to have load on them to contract, right? A lot of people shy away from talking about load, and I'm not a big fan of that. I like load. Load's a good thing, because you're not going to get bigger if you don't try to lift bigger weights, right? You just got to understand how to do it and understand how to load properly. But when we talk about like videos, what people don't know is that there are things that you might not understand. It's not about good or bad. It's just about preference or about intentionality that we're trying to elicit as a response from the exercise we're given, right? So like a lateral raise could be one of them. I want you guys to tell me the problem. This is just an instructional video, so I'm just going to the video. But can you tell me why, I think at least one of the reasons why a dumbbell lateral sucks? Like it can be good, but I just think it's dumb. So I'm just going to talk about it. Just spit it out.
You don't have constant tension on the mid delt throughout the movement.
Love it, man. When does it stop?
At the bottom of the movement, basically
Yeah,
as soon as the dumbbell is stacked under your shoulder.
and would it be fair to say that like anybody and their grandmother could probably grab like a 100-pound dumbbell still to do this and just move their arm with it, right? So you're probably going to get what, like 10 to 15 degrees range of motion that's just useless garbage, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly.
yeah, like again, not a bad thing. Like if you got to work out, grab some dumbbells, have some fun. What you can do though is like you can manipulate that by just, you guys have ever seen Ben's video on like biceps where like don't have the bicep back, but bring it forward slightly. That way the bicep's under tension, right? So same thing. It's like just stay out of it. Keep the dumbbells here. Keep the tension on by keeping them slightly out. Play around with that range of motion. So this also goes back to one of the first things I said, which is tempo. If you're going too fast, how do you even notice you're doing that? How do you have time to pay attention to it? Right? Like you won't. Like there's no way. And not only that, too, but it's a motion that because of inertia being involved, if you're going too fast, you're never going to be able to actually contract the muscle. And you could reverse it, which is like I can get away now because I'm going slow and intentional. I could get away with a lot less weight. Like I can probably speak for every single person here that like I've overlifted on my lateral raises. When I first started, I was a mook in the gym, just grabbing like whatever heavy weight, trying to apparently make myself look more manly. And now I just grab whatever I can do, and it's usually between 15 and 25 pounds. And it's just like just contract, and things have worked better because of it. So we got that, and again, it's a good thing. The next thing I want to bring into attention is that. So you're obviously bringing it up 10 pounds, only 10 pounds when it's there. Out here, it's gonna be worth way more, right? So you have this extended position where you are fully loading, fully shortened delt. Not a bad thing if you're training a shortened delt, but just wanted to bring that to your attention, guys, because then we got something like this where we got this handsome
The
stud here
tall and
talking about
compressed
this,
body.
and he's talking about how this would be a great lengthen position.
If I sit this way, and I'm overloading the mid part of the range.
Let me restart that one more time for
Again,
you guys so you can see what he says.
using one axis is super easy. And with this one, you can put the directions this way. You can actually come right across your body instead of being pressed in the chest. You just don't want to do this. But always on the cross body. That's over the lengthen part of the range. And if I sit this way, now I'm overloading the mid part of the range. So there.
So I won't go into like, how cables work in terms of tension, but do you guys understand how a cable would at least apply tension to length and range? Do you guys understand that part?
Yes.
Yeah. Bunch of thumbs up. Yeah. So it's important, right? Because again, what do we talk about with the chest fly with Arnold in his massive chesticles, right? Talk about the fact that if this guy can get comfortably into end ranges, then he's probably doing something right. It's probably like it might not have a direct effect on the muscle in terms of the muscle's unique ability to benefit from lengthened positions, but you can control it, which means that you can get more from the exercise. So when you're doing something like shoulders, I don't think that anybody would agree or disagree that there's probably never a time when you wouldn't just reach for a cable at all times, just because you can get both from it, and you can usually dial the weight more accurately, and you can manipulate things. Like that's what this video is right here. If you guys ever want, just type literally all I did is like you can really see. Cable lateral raise Ben Polsky. Just Google the stuff. Ben has so much content online. I always try to find his videos because it's like he'll go through the things that I'm going to talk about anyways. And like that's what he'll talk about later on in this video is like if you have a hard time contracting here, just move back. And now the source, like the cable source changes and how that's going to reflect in terms of resistance at this part. So really good stuff there. The next thing, hamstrings. So this one's kind of funny, guys, because I want to talk to you quickly about something that's a little different, which is when we're talking about movement, we're talking about trying to make sure that you stay injury free and try to make sure that you're staying in positions that help you lengthen or shorten. You guys have been on the calls before. You hear Ben talk about and us talk about origins and insertions and making sure your origin stays stable while the insertion moves or vice versa. You can kind of play with the hamstrings in a fun little way where you got Ben here and he's going to talk about how to best set up for a stiff leg deadlift, which is really, really good to try to take advantage of a length and range, especially at that origin, right? Up near the pelvis.
Sure. So my first thought is create as much force against the floor as I can. So I'm really trying to push my feet into the floor, like almost like I'm leg pressing the floor.
So what I do, what that's going to actually do is, if you feel that thread at home, by pushing the ground, everything from here down locks. My quads contract, my hands contract, my glutes contract, even my calves contract. So what I'm doing is pushing to the ground, and I'm using this as a hinge. My butt goes back. Go try and push into the ground. And go as far as I can while feeling comfortable and appropriate stress and hamstrings. That's literally my range right there. In fact, right now my hips are a little bit off, but that's my range. So if I go in lower than that, where's it coming from? Like I can touch the floor, it's not happening in a hamstring. So is it necessary then to touch the floor or I just touch the hamstring or deadlifts? Absolutely not. Especially when you're trying to isolate these muscles. So
what did you guys see that Ben did obviously really well? Like he described it all, but what did you guys see? That's what I want to know. So I want to know, basically what I'm trying to see is if I can help you guys take this kind of training efficacy into your workouts tomorrow. Somebody saw something. Come on.
Full hinge,
sorry, go ahead.
The full hinge, like all the way able to close again coming forward.
Yeah, so we were talking about the quad closing the knee. What's Ben trying to move there? The hip, right? So there's an angle there he's trying to achieve, right? Trying to move one thing. If more than one thing moves, what happens? Lost tension, right? Can you do that with a tempo of like of whatever? Just not paying attention to tempo? Can you do that? There's no way. There's no way, right? What else do you see? Nate, I'm going to call you, bud. What'd you see?
The putting his stomach to his thigh.
Yeah, right. So he's just bringing that down, right? He's trying to just move at one position. He's not really concerned with whether or not the bar goes anywhere particularly. He's not thinking I need to move bar, because if you do, then the bar starts moving from the hand, which moves from the shoulder, which moves from the spine, and then it starts moving down the chain, right? Mm-hmm. He's thinking instead, hey, I'm just going to use this muscle to contract down, right? Does that make sense to you guys? So the cool thing about this motion, again, and the hamstring as well, is that you get the opportunity to move the origin, that play around at that joint, right? Where the knee in this won't move. But then if you look at something like this guy.
Well, the calf will be way more work than the hamstring.
We're doing lion curl, right? And now he needs to keep the origin stable and he needs to move the knee, okay?
In that position. So just you stop about 15 degrees short. So that's about here. So I mean, that first little bit is calf. Now, you may want to do calf. For some people who want to be bodybuilders, like, hey, dude, you should do this because this will help your calf development. Gotcha. But if you don't, you... That's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So you can come down and stop a 15 degrees short there. Yep. Good. So now if I want to make this hard for you, actually, go, I'm just going to do something. You just go, keep going about yourself. Go. Push through me. Yep. Good. Pause, control, down. So if you're trying to produce maximum force, I want you to shove down to that pad as hard as you can with your knee. Go. Yep. Good. Still got to keep those hips down. So this isn't about beating me. This is about using my resistance to contract harder. So contract this as hard as you can. It's not about winning the tug of war. It's about learning using the contraction.
All right, I'm tired of hearing that meathead talk.
So, no, you know what the worst thing about learning how to do a lying hamstring right, though, is that you see everybody do it wrong. And I can't stand it because you see everybody. The amount of bikini girls I'll see go in there and they have 140 pounds stacked and everything is moving around. Everything, it's crazy. And it's important to understand how to move these kind of things, because what I'm trying to elicit to you guys, and if I'm not doing a good enough job, just tell me to shut up, but is that like, I want to make sure you guys understand why we want tempo. I want to make sure you guys understand why we want videos, because I'm telling you right now, I'm not even sure if I'm doing it sometimes right, unless I video myself and watch it back. Right. So do you guys see what Ben's cueing there? Do you see what he's trying to do with his hips? Do you understand that? Can somebody pop up and tell me what they found? Sorry.
Kill the screen share for a second.
Yeah. Let's see. There you go.
So, well, I'm gonna add some bullet points here that give you guys some good takeaways. Stability is your best friend. So the reason he's pushing his hips into the pad, the reason I'm aggressively trying to make him push his hips into the pad is strictly stability. So in general, if you can find a way to stabilize yourself, do it. Stability will increase contractile ability, bottom line. The goal of exercise, The exclusive goal of exercise is tension. I need to create as much possible tension in this muscle as I can. So if I increase my stability, I'll increase my tension. Wrap your head around that. Second, this is really important that not everyone, not even I knew this to the extent that I've recently learned. As someone who's a beginner, quote unquote beginner, you have more value or you get more value from training more in the length and range. So said differently, someone who's less advanced will get more value from training the length and range than someone who's more advanced. So that's where this attention to like, I need to be in these really lengthened positions comes from. So as an example, you'll watch some pro bodybuilders who don't train the lengthened position. And the reality is they don't actually get as much. Once you've reached a certain point of hypertrophy, you don't actually get as much benefit from the lengthened position as someone who's less trained does. So as we emphasize these lengthened positions, this massive amount of control and tension and stopping and pausing, it's because the less trained you are, the more benefit you get there. That's important. Another thing that's important, the more time you spend in length and range, the more muscle damage you're going to create. That's not always a good thing. So muscle damage can call it muscle damage or soreness, isn't necessarily a good thing. It's a byproduct. So we don't necessarily want to aim for soreness. So even though you guys are like, oh, I'm not sore after workout, or I'm really sore after a workout, soreness should not be a goal. It's a byproduct. So the way I want you to think of it, if you get sore, that's okay. But if you don't get sore, that's also okay. So the way we induce soreness is by training slower. Tension can induce soreness. Training to fatigue induces soreness, or training in length and range induces soreness. Those are how we induce soreness. I'll say that again. Training heavy is one. Training slow, eccentrically. Fatigue induces soreness. And training in length and position. Those are the primary ways we induce soreness. So soreness is not necessarily important, but it can be a byproduct. So just think through that. So what I want you guys to think about is maximum tension should be your target, not always fatigue and not always soreness. The goal is I don't have to get sore to get big. I don't have to get fatigued to get bigger. Those are not necessary requirements. Those are byproducts. Those are interference mechanisms, in fact. So the goal, I'll say that again, those are interference mechanisms. Soreness and fatigue are actually interference mechanisms. They're a natural byproduct, but they're not necessarily goals. So I don't know if that flips the way you think about exercise a little bit. The goal is to maximize tension. Like we were talking about squeeze, push hard, not necessarily moving toward fatigue and soreness. That adds a bit of a change in dimension of how you guys look at exercise.
Ben, I'm going to definitely pick your brain because you're trying to talk about it anyways. One of the things I've found, and I do this a lot with clients that are successful, clients who struggle, is that I find clients who struggle, especially guys who have a hard time putting on mass, who conveniently actually work out really well. They actually spend too much time creating what I'll call, just for the sake of argument, like this artificial tension. Like they think they're just contracting, but they're not contracting against anything. And they're just moving their joint through space. And yeah. I want to try to see if you can define a distinction between that versus getting your muscle in a loaded lengthened position, then contracting against it.
So like, as an example, me standing here contracting my bicep with an internal intention versus putting weight in my hand.
Yeah. Like, as in like, if you contracted that tight and you just had like a 2-pound dumbbell, being like, well, I can't do that if you give me any heavier. And I'm like, but you can still grab 30 pounds and contract it.
Sure. So the difference is co-contraction, right? So as I said, as I contract my bicep, my tricep contracts. So the ability to not contract, it's kind of this tug of war. And co-contraction is a skill. So the ability to turn my tricep off in order to contract the bicep is a prerequisite to growth. So if I want to contract my bicep with a 30-pound dumbbell, a 40-pound dumbbell, a 50-pound dumbbell, the only way I can do that is the tricep has to learn to relax. Because as I'm standing here contracting on my own, the tricep is contracting to create a counterforce. But the more effective I can get at relaxing the tricep on a bicep curl, the more effective the bicep can be at contracting. It's a skill you have to practice. There's no other way around it. So you could argue that doing these contractions where I'm just standing there posing may actually be counterproductive because you're like, well, I'm training myself to contract both the tricep and the bicep at the same time. One could make an argument for that. I don't think it would be a long-standing argument, because I think there's value in learning to contract that, but there's also an enormous amount of value in learning to relax the opposite muscle in order to contract the agonist muscle. So I think that's kind of what you're getting at there, Stevie. If you can use a 30-pound dumbbell, you must use the 30-pound dumbbell, because you must learn to relax the antagonist muscle.
Yeah, and also at the end of the day, like when we're looking at this from a functional standpoint too, like you talk a lot about that, right? Like taking things sometimes out of isolation and understanding, like, yeah, your body is supposed to move. You're supposed to be able to move joints and move your body around.
Yeah, and so anyone who's new to this coaching would not have heard this before, but bodybuilding in and of itself is dysfunctional. You're literally creating dysfunction, right? By training a muscle in isolation, you're creating dysfunction. That doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. It sounds like it's a bad thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but the body is meant to move as an integrated unit. So if I train something in isolation to make it bigger, that's by definition, it's creating dysfunction, because function is I'm integrating all these different pieces into one. However, here's a way to think about this. If I want to become better to squat, squat incorporates my spinal erectors, my glutes, my hamstrings, my quads at some level, right? Varying level incorporates all those muscles. If I want to get better at the squat, I can get better at the individual parts in isolation and then integrate them into the whole. So that does work. So I would say there's value in doing both isolated and integrated exercise. You guys get what I say when I say integrated? Sprinting, integrated. Squatting, integrated. Jogging, integrated. Right? It's an integrated, multiple muscles.
So if we took that thought and like took the next level and kind of like made it fall in on itself, where you take something that's multi-joint, like a bench press, and then you get overly specific and say, I only want to contract my tricep. But it will never only contract, because other things are moving, because other joints are moving. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at, where people will get almost like they'll get this sensation lock in their brain where they're trying to only get to one thing. And then it's like, but that's never going to be, because you're moving other things and other things will contract. Right?
Yeah. And it's important to note that your contractile ability is governed by stability, and stability is governed by other muscles in the area. So if I'm trying to extend my tricep with more force, that's downregulated based on instability at my shoulder. So isolation just never works. It always falls apart, because the body is always just dependent on other pieces.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I sent a quick two videos, guys, to show you. You guys have seen these videos. I just want to kind of get them done so I can get back into what I was just wanted to finish on. You guys see my screen? Yeah. So quick incline curls. Again, this is an instructional video. The reason why is because this isn't obviously a lengthened position bicep. I want to show you this for 2 seconds, okay? So length is your bicep. And then we have something, a variation of like a high cable curl, right? A high cable curl designed to challenge a shortened position, right? So this kind of stuff is important because, and it kind of ties into what Ben was just saying, because in my opinion, it's a great way to kind of go back on what we were saying about that feeling, because sometimes going for sensation, you've all heard that mind-muscle connection, in my opinion, might not be the goal. And sometimes people try to chase that. So everybody put your arm up here right now, if you can, and give me a good old flex bicep. You should feel it flex like awesome, right? It's a good flex. You're like, oh, that's my bicep. There she is. Now if you put your arm back here and try to flex it, you don't really feel much. It gets tight, but you're not going to feel much, right? And it's because you're putting your bicep down to a lengthened position. It's just not going to feel the same. Yes, you follow me so far? Okay, same thing. If you put you guys' arms down like this, and you flex your tricep, you'll feel your tricep like lock up. You feel that? You guys do that right now? You feel your tricep lock up? Put your arm over your head. Flex your arm. Probably not going to feel the same kind of sensation, right? You'll feel your arm, but it's not going to lock up like down there. It's not going to have that same Charlie horse kind of sensation, right? Because again, it's lengthened versus shortened positions. So why I showed you those last ones, and it didn't really matter about the form because the guy wasn't doing it very well anyways. But at the same time, the reason I showed you is because you have two different positions. And if you're in like a incline dumbbell curl, you're never going to feel that squeeze the same as you would in a high curl, and vice versa. You're not going to get a lengthened position as advantageously in a high curl, but there's different reasons why we want to do it. Shortened positions sorry, provide incredible benefit towards stability in the joint. Like one of my favorite things to make sure somebody can bench press really well is honestly to get them in a high cable curl, because the bicep can provide great opportunity to stabilize the shoulder. It's really cool. It's just a cool thing people don't know. And then they do the bicep, the cable curls, and they're slugging around and they're moving their arm like that. And it's like, well, if we need to keep that origin stable, then what's going on? Right. So again, insert send coach video. And then vice versa, we have something like, I couldn't find it, but Ben has a really good video online as well, talking about how if you go into incline dumbbell curl, flex your tricep at the bottom. Make sure that you're flexing that, because that's a good cue to make sure that you're fully lengthening your bicep. Right. So the lengthening position is a good opportunity to fully, again, express a lengthened bicep. So I want to kind of open it up, guys. Did you guys have any questions about your own training and anything that might pertain to what we talked about today that we can kind of round table it? You guys lift weights, right?
Yeah, I have one here. What is your or Ben's opinion on long length partial reps? There seems to be like a decent amount of research now showing like it could be more beneficial for hypertrophy. And then
In
how would
my,
you weigh? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
no, I think that there's certain muscles that they can, like the chest for sure, great. I think it definitely it, like in quads and legs, I think that it's probably something you're gonna hear trendy in this world right now, just because it seems to do that with the fitness gurus online. They'll find something, jump the bandwagon to float the algorithm for a little while,
For
and then
sure.
it'll be something else. But I think that at least right now, like you can take some merit to it. Like Ben was just talking about the stretch mediated hypertrophy with certain muscles and how like beginners can benefit from it. And the chest seems to be one of those things that it benefits really well from. So doing long lengthened partials could be beneficial.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, Ben, scientific brain.
There's a lot to it. There's a lot more than people realize. And so, Zach, I don't know your level of understanding, but I'll try to give you a simple context. So in the body, we have something called muscle architecture, which means the orientation of the muscle fibers can be different. And as an example, the bicep is called a fusiform muscle, which means the muscle fibers lay straight. The quad, it's called a multipennated angle. So like you've seen the quad, if someone gets really shredded, they have these like pennation. It's like the shred that goes a different angle. That really plays into whether or not lengthened range partials will be beneficial. And Steve was saying there's a fan muscle, the lats and the pecs are fan muscles. So all those different muscle fiber architectures will implicate into whether or not lengthened range is going to be more beneficial than, say, full range. Won't get into any further than that. However, here's something to think about. As I said earlier, lengthened range causes more muscle damage. Training the muscle range, and it causes more muscle damage from a perspective of actually just inducing more calcium ions. Calcium ions is the trigger to make muscles stop contracting. So in calcium ion, it's a trigger to make muscles contract, but when they accumulate, they stop contracting. So my understanding is if you induce excessive calcium ions too early, you downregulate performance. So if you're going to use end range tension, call it, for hypertrophy, the only place in your workout would be at the end of the workout. Don't do it early in the workout. Save it for the end, because it will downregulate your contractile ability, your ability to produce tension. Tension is what's driving hypertrophy primarily, right? So if we know we need to maximize tension, we would save something like a long range hypertrophy or a long range set for the end, because you don't want to impede tension. So that hopefully gives you a roundabout answer.
Yeah, awesome, Ben. Thanks.
I can piggyback off what you said, I'm going to pick Ben's question or Ben's mind, because I would kind of like throwing it at him because I don't get to talk to him enough. So Ben, here it is. What's your opinion on like when you look at somebody who's done something well? There's a popular thing now with a lot of people trying to discredit the fact that that was what got them the result, and all they just do is, I was telling Beata, they just pull out the old faithful genetics card. And it's like, oh no, Arnold didn't get a chest because he did long lengthened stuff. He did it, he got his chest because he had good genetics. And then they just don't want to accept that he might have been onto something. And they might say the same thing about your leg. So it's like, oh no, Ben didn't work for them. He just had genetics. He could have done one leg extension a week and he would have gotten the same thing. It's like, well, maybe probably not. Right? But there's a
Well,
big thing for people doing that.
the answer is always all of the above, right? I could have never got my legs without, one, my genetics, and two, working harder than probably anyone in the world at the time. And I would give the same to Arnold. And like, you can't take away the guy's work because he, yes, had great genetics. It has to be all of it. It's never just one. Yeah, for sure, man. Like, we all know guys who have incredible genetics, or I know guys who have incredible genetics who I fucking smoked. They had way better genetics than me, and I kicked their ass, right? And we have guys who also had better genetics than me who kicked my ass. So like, it's both. It's always both.
Have you seen, how do I ask this? Have you seen guys with incredible genetics do things wrong and still get the same result, or do they have to do the thing right to make the genetics pop out?
That's a good question. I think for sure there's guys who have just ridiculous genetics. You can just train like complete monkeys and build huge amounts of muscle. I don't think it takes away from the effort component. I think there still needs to be some semblance of effort, but I don't think they need to optimize the way they train to get maximum hypertrophy. I was going to say an example, but I'm going to throw it in now. There's definitely some guys who are at the top of the sport who train like shit. And so the way I think of it, and this could be right or wrong, but the way I think of it is some people have a lower threshold. So let's think of like muscle building like a switch. Like I got to go in the gym and I got to generate some level of tension to create this threshold to elicit this body say like, hey, just turn on the genes to build muscle. Some people just have a lower threshold. Some people have a higher threshold, some have a lower threshold. If you have a high threshold, you got to put in work. If you have a low threshold, it just takes a little bit, just a little bit of signal, a little bit of stimulus. And then you got the testosterone, you got the great inflammatory genes, you got the great glucose uptake genes, that just like, oh, everything just works. Everything clicks.
Yeah, it's a funny question because like I've been totally on like the muscle meathead train lately, and I've been watching like the Pumping Iron, watched a couple of the Generation Irons just to like kill some time here while I'm doing some stuff. And one of I didn't notice this before, and you guys will probably notice it if you watch it back too. If you watch like Generation Iron 2 or something like that, and you see guys' physiques, they're just all every day. Andrew. If you watch the guys' physiques, they're all this retracted chest up, forward head posture, right, with a thick back, but they have no lats. And then if you go watch Pumping Iron, it's the exact opposite. They all have these gigantic lats. They're walking around like they're a bunch of kites, and they have no mid back. And I'm like, what did nobody really talk about in the 80s? Nobody was talking about scapular positioning, really. They're just like, bend over and pick that up. That's training 101. And so it's kind of funny that like a lot of people got called on genetics, but yet you see the training, and the training was very, right? Everybody's reaching. Everybody was in these positions that was meant to grow lats, and they all conveniently did. But now you'll hear that's not how you grow lats.
So I would say the one big difference that stands out to me from those guys to now is access to equipment, right? So like back then, it's like you're doing pull-ups, you're doing a lot of pull-ups. Maybe you're doing some bent rows with a barbell. What else? Maybe a seated cable row, that's it. Whereas now it's like you've got this plethora of shitty machines that all really forces people to row. And when I say shitty machines, I mean shitty machines. Like now in the last like 3 years, we've had some decent machines come out, maybe 5 years, decent machines come out. But in the last 20 years, the machines are garbage. So like you're in these shitty machines, and you'll start to take the shape of what the machine allows you to do, right? And I won't get into that, but like the mechanics of the machine plays in, and most back equipment is fucking garbage.
Yeah, I still have to go to MI. You were saying that you've picked out like all the best equipment for MI.
Yeah, it definitely has the best for MI for you.
Yeah, I can't wait. Did anybody else have anything to pop in and say? Andrew, I haven't talked to you at all. Can you at least say hi?
Yeah, man. Sorry, everybody. I was a little bit late picking up the little ones, but I always love jumping in here and talking about building muscle. So it was kind of funny. Actually, 2 days ago, I got Kim signed up to another gym here in Vegas, and a guy behind me goes, "What's up, man?" And then I turn around, and it's Jay Cutler, which I just thought was funny and random. So.
That's awesome. I love how Jay is such a meathead. I still haven't watched the podcast you had with him on there, Ben. Is it good?
Yeah, man. Jay's just a humble guy with some really great insight. I like Jay a lot.
Hey, he seems very genuine.
Yeah, man. And he's not an idiot, right? Like, he's a smart guy. And like, anytime you can hear a smart guy who made it to that level give you some feedback, that there's going to be some golden nuggets in there.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Well, guys, I just wanted to say thank you for letting me talk. I will always talk your ear off about anything meathead oriented, because this is why I'm in here. And if you have any questions, please shoot me a message. I'm always putting this kind of crap on Instagram too. So if you have any questions, follow me there and just drop me lines, because it's worth it, man. Like, if there's anything I've ever learned, even just working with Ben, here as a coach, but also just like with training stuff, is that you can see, like, you can see results in 1 week, guys. Okay. You can. And you can see probably more results than you'd want to expect in 1 week. And that can be, really expedited by just doing the simple things, by like following tempo, sending your coach videos, because if we're doing what we need to do, that's like, let us do our jobs. It's intervening, right? And providing the necessary adjustments on the fly. Cause that's what online coaching is really, really cool for. Right. A lot of people think that it's about, a lot of people think that about, it's about like, you know, getting in person, but it's like, I did the in-person thing. Online is better because I can make an adjustment like that and the rest of your week can better. Whereas it's vice versa. In person, they need me. Then they go in there on their own. It's not going to work, right? So I hope that helps. Yeah. And I hope the guys let me talk to you again soon.
So one thing I'll say in closing, guys, just to let you know, the camp page for Spain is going to be up by Friday. It's actually done. We're just kind of going to put it up. So if you guys don't know, we're doing a muscle intelligence camp in Spain in April. The dates are the 15th through the 22nd. Love to have you guys all there. Put on your calendar. Each coach is allowed to invite 5 clients only. So talk to your coach, get your personal invite, and let's get out there. Again, put on the calendar. It's going to be incredible. We're going to have a blast. A lot of hard training. So it'll be 7 days, 5 days really hard training, 2 days. So we call it the Warrior and the Monk. If you guys are new, 5 days of really hard training, 2 days of more monk, which is a lot of, we'll do a lot of yoga, breath work, meditation, hiking, maybe some plant medicine. If you guys are interested in that, that'll be available as well. Yeah. What did I say? 15th through 22nd of April. It's in Marbella, Spain. If anyone has questions, that'll be, like I said, that'll be going up probably on Friday. Gents, we'd love to see you there. Great way to connect with your coach and get your ass kicked for 5 days. For anyone who went to Costa Rica, ask them how it was. They had a blast, I think. You can ask them. Okay, guys, have a great one. We will talk to you next Wednesday. Go crush it. Set some new records. Work hard. Master the one rep.